This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and in the news in the past couple of weeks, homeopathy under fire. Today we're going to do an investigative report. We're going to talk to America's foremost homeopathic advocate. I've known him for, I don't even want to say how long, from the very beginning of when I've been in practice. And he is Dana Ullman. He's a master of public health, and he's also author of numerous books on homeopathy, The Homeopathic Revolution, Homeopathy A to Z, Homeopathic Medicines for Children and Infants, Discovering Homeopathy, and Everybody's Guide to Homeopathic Medicine. And he constantly writes about this. He's got a website on homeopathy entitled homeopathic.com. He's head of something called the Homeopathic Educational Services, located in Berkeley, California. And he's well acquainted with the current controversy about homeopathy. So welcome to Intelligent Medicine. It's a pleasure having you on the program. I'm you know, kind of ready to say welcome back, because when our show was in our previous incarnation of Intelligent Medicine, was called Health Talk, you were a frequent guest.
Yes, we've danced before, Dr. Hoffman, and it's been a good dance. I appreciate your questions. Even your skepticism, I have no problem with.
Indeed, you know, because we have to take sometimes the devil's advocate position on this, because there is a controversy brewing. I mean, there's a long-time controversy about homeopathy. So, you know, I'm sure you'll...
The evidence now is just so strong. In fact, it's so strong that the antagonists are freaking out a bit. And so they're actively creating misinformation. And that's when you know that you really are in a sweet spot. That's when you know that you're really threatening. Because when homeopathy is ignored, then it's ignored. But the fact that they're attacking us means that we're doing something right.
Well, exactly. You know, when you go to, you know, not just health food stores, but now major retail pharmacies, you see homeopathic remedies side by side with common over-the-counter remedies, you know, nasal decongestants and pain remedies. And then you'll see adjacent to them homeopathic remedies, which the critics claim, and, you know, well, let's frame the issue, because recently the FDA completed a two-day hearing to solicit opinions on whether and how to adjust their policies, their enforcement policies, to reflect the growth in the homeopathic marketplace. As you said, it's burgeoning, and they're concerned that the public may be misled, that people will believe in the equivalence of homeopathic medicine with conventional drugs, and they don't like the idea that homeopathic remedies are making such inroads. So, were you there at that hearing, or were you...
No, I wasn't. I was across the world speaking at a variety of different research conferences and scientific institutions in the country of India at the time.
Well, by the way, right now, homeopathic medicine is very popular. It's a very popular...
yeah. In south of India, in southern India alone, there's 1,000 homeopathic dispensaries that are government-owned, which means that they employ a pharmacist, a homeopathic doctor, and then someone to clean up. And this is government-owned, so... and I spoke at a homeopathic university, a medical school and hospital that's also government-owned. And there's 500 students there. The whole country creates 20,000 new homeopaths every year. And according to The Lancet, over 100 million people in India rely entirely on homeopathic medicine for their healthcare needs. In other words, when they get cancer, when they get arthritis, when they get ulcerative colitis, when they get hepatitis, when they get anything. And so to me, it's remarkable that anyone can be skeptical of homeopathy, because believe me, there's no physician that could practice medicine prescribing placebos for a week, let alone a month, let alone a year, let alone 10 years, and have patients come back to them again and again, again and again. And one of the days I actually sat in with one doctor in India as he saw his patients. And in the 10 patients that I saw, every single one of them had a clinically beneficial result. And, you know, I don't get that degree of results when I practice homeopathy. So, you know, we all got to learn from each other here.
Indeed. But so let me read from a very, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, a very skeptical article in Forbes magazine. So to give you an idea, you know, Forbes magazine is a business publication, tends to be a conservative viewpoint. For some reason in America, the conservatives or Republicans have aligned with kind of a scientific rationalist position. You know, they're pro-vaccine, they're anti-regulation of pesticides and anti-regulation, you know, environmental regulations. And they tend to side with skeptics.
They tend to side with big pharma.
Big pharma and scientific skeptics.
Describing it.
You know, which is a shame, because there's some aspects of the Republican platform, you know, which is that sort of, you know, laissez-faire libertarian viewpoint, which is that, you know, anti-regulation, let's not have the government intrude on personal choice. That is an appealing philosophy. And yet, you know, this is the
Absolutely.
Viewpoint of Forbes magazine. But I'll just share with you, you know, some of the more pithy critiques. They say, quote, "The bizarre contention of homeopaths is that the preparation is a medicinal product, despite the fact that no molecules of the original material remains in the final solution." And I think that that's the crunch point for a lot of skeptics about homeopathy, even people in the natural medicine community. They may believe in herbal medicine, they may believe in vitamins and supplements, certainly a diet intervention. But what they're saying is that homeopathy seems to defy the rules of modern physics, chemistry, and biology, that, you know, what's there? It's an energetic medicine.
Great. Ron, let me now totally destroy that point of view.
I'm sure you're used to it.
Because it just simply is not just wrong.
I'm just setting you up for that.
I'm just of ignorance that shows that they don't even read their own research. You know, the American Chemistry Society is not a homeopathic organization, as you can imagine. The American Chemistry Society publishes one of their scientific journals in a field called material sciences. Material sciences is this integration of chemistry, physics, and engineering that just looks at different technologies and the ingredients of the technologies and how to make them so that the systems work. And one of the subsets in this area looks at water and glass. And part of this research that's been done is they find that when you take a high-quality glass and you take a double-distilled water, which is what we use in homeopathy, when we dilute our medicines, we distill the water once, and then the pharmacies or the manufacturers distill it a second time to make as high a quality of pure water as possible.
So supposedly nothing there, just H2O molecules.
No, that's right, right. H2O. But they find that when you use even a high-quality glass and you shake the vial vigorously, like we do in the manufacture of the remedies, whatever substance you're putting in there, too, will blanch against the side walls, as will the bubbles will glance against the side walls. And very minute doses of silica will fall into the water. And in fact, they measured it, and there's 6 parts per million of these silica fragments, sort of like dust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't create any type of disruption to anyone that would drink the water, because, you know, like we're breathing air, we're breathing various particles of organic and inorganic matter, and, you know, our lungs and our kidneys are filtrating this, and it's no problem. However, here's the crux of the matter, that the head of material sciences at Stanford University for a couple of decades was this guy named Bill Tiller. And he estimated that the shaking that a homeopathic manufacturer does, which is 40 vigorous shakes, creates bubbles, and I love this term, nanobubbles, that brings oxygen down into the water and creates what's deemed to be a highly pressurized water, akin to being at 10,000 atmospheres. What that means is that it's so pressurized that whatever substance you're putting in the water will be thrust into the silica fragments that are floating in the water. And every substance will be thrust into the silica fragments in their own idiosyncratic fashion. Then, after the 40 shakes, when the manufacturer dumps out the water, the silica fragments cling to the glass walls.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that in India, the most highly respected government institution of science there is called the India Institute of Technology. And they, a group of six scientists did a study of, as it turns out, six different homeopathic medicines, different metals, gold, silver, copper, tin, zinc, platinum. And then they diluted them 1 to 100 six times, 30 times, and 200 times. And according to general laws of physics and chemistry, if you dilute something 1 to 100 just 12 times, you shouldn't have any of the remaining molecules left. But that formula doesn't account for the silica fragments in the water. It doesn't account for the bubbles and the nanobubbles. It doesn't account for pouring out of the fluid and then the silica fragments clinging to the glass walls. And so what they found, the scientists found, is using three different types of spectroscopy, they were able to measure nanoparticles of each of the six different metals, no matter how many times they did these dilutions. And here's the startling fact. They found so much of them that the number of this, the nanoparticles of the gold, of the silver, of the copper, of the tin, were in higher concentration than the normal doses of endocrine gland secretions.
Which are very, very strong, tiny. We know they're infinitesimal amounts of, like,
that's right,
thyroid-stimulating hormone or ACTH. You know, very,
all these
very,
these
are all nanomolar kind of things.
That's right. That's right. And the only way that someone can be skeptical of homeopathy now is if they believe that our own endocrine system is only producing placebo. And if they are that daft to make that assertion, then okay, they win. They win the most daftness. But the bottom line, and this is what's so impressive, this journal Langmuir published this very important study that it was repeated with six different substances, and at this conference there were other talks about other substances being tested at even higher dilutions, and they consistently find the persistence of these nanoparticles in substantial quantities. So, in fact, I used to think of homeopathy as an energy medicine.
Right, that there's non-Newtonian kind of energy field that would sound sort of mystical, like, well, there's something there. We know there's something there, but modern physics can't appreciate
this,
it.
This new research brings it down to anyone with any background in basic sciences. The bottom line is nanoparticles of homeopathic medicines persist. And now the skeptics have actually gone online saying that homeopathic medicines are contaminated with the ingredients that we say is on the label.
Right. Well, you can't really have it both ways because, I mean, on the one hand, the critics say, you know, they're basically selling you water and it's, you know, there's nothing there, so it's a ripoff. But on the other hand, they're saying, it could be dangerous. Like, how does that, can't square those two arguments.
Yeah, and that's what lets you know that they're really flopping in the wind. You know, they're doing whatever they can to be against homeopathy, and they're not maintaining that scientific mindset that really tries to be objective and that really tries to inquire what is and isn't true. What they're doing is they're trying to damn you if you do and damn you if you don't. But worst of all, in this case, that particular writer wasn't even familiar with this body of work that has been the rage in homeopathy and the rage in nanomedicine since 2010. And, you know, what happens is I educate many of these skeptics, and then they still refuse to write about it, acknowledge it, or whatever.
Well, we're a different sort of forum here, so we're going to take the evidence as it presents itself. But let's go back to the placebo effect. I mean, even accepting the argument of the critics, which I think you've refuted, what's wrong with invoking
a part?
Yeah, exactly. So what's wrong with the placebo effect? Because we know that even when they study potent pharmaceutical drugs, for example, psychiatric medications, the placebo effect is enormous. And we know that many of the drugs out there have harmful effects as well as potentially beneficial effects. Sometimes the harmful effects virtually outweigh the beneficial effects.
Sure.
What's wrong with a part of our culture embracing homeopathic remedies for, let's say, minor ailments, which are usually self-limited anyway, and invoking a healing response or a placebo response in children, for example, with minor illnesses where all too often they get antibiotics, they get powerful acid-blocking drugs. A homeopathic remedy would seem like a positive thing.
Well, you know, for those people that think that homeopathy is only a placebo effect, you're welcome to think that. But, you know, the bottom line is that homeopathy gained its greatest popularity in the 19th century due to its incredible successes in treating infectious disease epidemics like cholera, yellow fever, scarlet fever. You know that four different popes gave the highest honor that a pope can give to a non-clergy person because of these homeopathic doctors were treating people during these infectious disease epidemics so successfully. I challenge anyone to try and treat a person with typhoid, with cholera, with scarlet fever, with any of these serious infectious diseases with just a placebo. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't. It's not adequate. And let alone, like I said, you know, throughout Europe today, besides India, in Europe, homeopathy is the leading alternative therapy practiced by doctors. So, in fact, there was a recent report that showed that 95% of general practitioners in France prescribe homeopathic medicines. And the WHO has deemed France to have the best quality medical care in the world. And one of the reasons is that they don't just do conventional medicine there. They don't. And besides France, I mean, in Germany, about 20% of German doctors use homeopathic medicines regularly. And, you know, for those people that are sports fanatics, as it turns out, the soccer teams there, which they are called football teams, is an all-star team of these football players. And a recent article noted that 95% of the all-star players in Germany use homeopathic medicine. So, and for those people out there that are into sports, you've heard of Arnica, you've heard of calendula. Arnica is that great remedy for both shock and trauma of injury, and also sprains and strains. And it can be taken in pill form, or you can take it externally in a topical form. That French company Boiron makes a great Arnica gel and ointment, and they also make a calendula, which is for wounds and burns. And, you know, if you really want to get some proof in the pudding, you know, try Arnica, try calendula. These are really great remedies that you can do on your own. Now, you can't use homeopathic medicines to treat chronic ailments. You know, for that, you need to go to a professional homeopath. And some of us, you know, I see most of my patients in these modern days on Skype and on the telephone. So I can see patients anywhere in the world and then arrange to have a medicine sent to them.
And that's by the way, just that's a service that's available through your website, which is
homeopathic.com.
And so help us distinguish between homeopathic and herbal, because there's a lot of confusion of that. Sometimes patients say, well, you're a homeopathic doctor. I go, no, I am a nutritionally oriented physician who uses herbal remedies. I mean, I will tell patients to use Arnica. I'll tell patients to use Traumeal. I'll tell patients to use remedies, but I don't consider myself a homeopathic physician.
Right.
Can you help
right.
us distinguish
sure.
among the two?
Yeah, I think what happens is the word homeopathic is often so unknown to people, and they know it means alternative, that they think that it just is the generic word for holistic.
Right.
And, of course, we know it's not. That's not true. Homeopathy is a specific regimen, a specific school of thought, and a specific group of medicines. And in herbal medicine, they may use the same botanical substances like arnica or like calendula. But in homeopathy, they will undergo this process of diluting and shaking, diluting and shaking. The exception is with arnica and calendula, which are topical remedies that are herbal remedies, and at the same time, in the same dose, they are homeopathic remedies at present.
So they contain a material measurable amounts of these herbs.
They contain 5% usually, sometimes 7%, sometimes 3% of the botanical matter. That's right.
Right.
Well, but when you take Arnica 30C, the C stands for centesimal, and 30 means it was diluted 1 to 100 30 times. So that would be in the nanodose range that we were talking about earlier.
Right. Which, you know, kids in high school physics are memorizing Avogadro's number, which is, what I forgot, sometimes 6 times 10 to the negative 23rd. And so, yeah, what that would mean is that by the laws of chemistry and physics, there taint nothing there. And we believe
one thing I want to remind you about, Ron, so you get this.
No, I get it. I just want you to address
that mathematical formula would only be valid if you're only using numbers, not real biology. Because in real biology, you would have to account for the silica fragments that fall
right.
off the glass
the
wall.
Succussion, in other words, the succussion effects.
It changed. So, in fact, in any discussion, anyone that brings up Avogadro's number doesn't understand how homeopathic medicines are made and doesn't account for these other more complex features.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to me, that's like a red flag, that person saying, I don't understand science, and I'm doctrinaire, and I'm
right.
I'm going to stamp my feet and just believe what I want to believe anyway.
So with the silica theory, what you're saying is that if the succussion were to occur in, say, a little plastic vial, you couldn't create a homeopathic remedy. It has to be in a glass succussion tube to make a true homeopathic.
Well, you know, it is interesting because some homeopathic medicines are begin not in liquid, but begin in a porcelain bowl. And they are pulverized.
Like a mortar and pestle kind of thing.
They're mortar and pestled. And the difference there is that although there isn't silica fragments in the same way, silica is one of the ingredients in porcelain. And so it would be one of the other ways that small doses of whatever plant, mineral, or animal or chemical would be attached to some of the minerals from the porcelain. And the bottom line is that homeopaths have developed a means of reducing the toxic effects of medicines and creating nanoparticles or nano doses of them that then, and this is the interesting thing that some serious researchers are finding, that these nanodoses are not only able to penetrate cell membranes more effectively, but able to penetrate blood-brain barriers and able to then have a more powerful neurological effect on a person's overall system and create more therapeutically beneficial results. Because the whole thing in homeopathy, the principle of similars, is the same principle that immunology derived out of.
Right. I was just about to ask you, this is similar in a way to allergy treatments because they use very, very dilute amounts
very
of things that
amount.
You might react to. In fact, there's this new theory that if you just give sublingual, like the very, very, very diluted amounts of peanut to people who even have life-threatening reactions to peanut, that they might gradually overcome their hypersensitivity to peanuts.
Sure. You know, it's a bit ironic and even cosmic that my father was not just a pediatrician. He was an allergist.
Hmm. Oh, there you
so
go.
So I had this basic principle of similars in my blood. And as it turns out, and as I told him when he was alive, that there were three doctors that founded the American Academy of Allergy, one of whom was a California doctor who was a homeopath.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this principle of homeopathy, this principle of similars, is not only at the heart of conventional immunology, but the first scientist to ever win the Nobel Prize in medicine. He won it for his discovery of the diphtheria vaccine and the tetanus vaccine.
It's also at the heart of vaccine science.
Yeah, that's right. And as it turns out, he acknowledged that he got the idea from the homeopath.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
that
then
makes
he
sense.
Acknowledged that if and when he is sick, he considers homeopathy.
Yeah.
So he said he was not able to say that before he won the Nobel.
Right. He had to have the stature of the Nobel Prize before he could
right.
even
enunciate that.
That's right.
He needs the stature of the Nobel. And as it turns out, one other major Nobelist, the guy that discovered the HIV virus, Luc Montagnier, who's done some important new research on homeopathy. And mind you, for doing this new research, he has been vilified.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's kind of like the Linus Pauling story. That as long as he was doing mainstream organic chemistry, they said you're okay. But once he's got it on vitamin C, they said he went off the deep end.
Oh, my God. He's gone off the deep end, despite winning two Nobels. One isn't enough. Two. So, now, the bottom line around the FDA is that the homeopaths have actually had a long-term good working relationship with the FDA, and there's good reasons for that. The homeopaths actually empowered the FDA. I don't know if you know that story there, Ron, but a senator from New York in the 1930s, his campaign manager was a guy named Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And he was a physician and a homeopathic doctor named Royal Copeland. And after he won his third senatorial election, he then created legislation to empower the FDA to regulate drugs. And as a part of that, he also gave recognition to the homeopathic pharmacopoeia as a legal and recognized compendium of drugs.
We'll talk about that in greater detail, because we need to divide this podcast into two parts, bite-sized chunks. We're going to proceed to part two of today's conversation with Dana Ullman. He's a master homeopath. He heads Homeopathic Educational Services. Their website is homeopathic.com. And he's here to address recent criticisms of homeopathy that were brought to light in an FDA hearing, where FDA wants to more stringently regulate homeopathy. Dana Ullman's view is that this is simply not necessary, and that it's an encroachment on our freedom of choice in healthcare. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.